Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Do appreciate it. If you hear me coughing tonight, I think it's because it's either lung cancer, which I hope it isn't, because I haven't smoked in about 6 years, or a little dark humor there, or the Code Red alert here in Atlanta that has been on now since before we left on vacation. It's pretty hard to breathe in the city of Atlanta, and I made the mistake of going out this morning and swimming laps. I thought I had did it early enough to avoid. They tell you here now, if you're going to exercise outside, do it early in the morning or late at night. And I think I might have missed the cutoff. So I've been hacking and coughing today, and just wanted to let you know. All right, but don't send me any emails about cures. All right, thank you. Appreciate it. I'm not trying to be cavalier about the wonderful cures you folks send when you have a hint that I've got a cold or a cough. But if I gargle any more eye of newt and wing of bat mixed up with garlic, I'm going to lose it. All right. This is the evening of tomorrow's a big day. This is Elvis's dead eve, 30 years ago. I guess we should stop the program right there. But before we do, the Bush administration said a couple of days ago that the constitutionality of its warrantless electronic eavesdropping program cannot be challenged. Think about this for a second. Bush has in place a spying program that is targeting American citizens that cannot be challenged by presidential directive. And remember who rewrote the law a week or so ago, giving Bush the power to do whatever he wanted to. It was the Democratic Congress. And don't forget, Nancy Pelosi could have stopped it dead in its tracks. So could Harry Reid, but they didn't. They went along with it. Two senior Justice Department officials speaking on condition of anonymity, of course, in a teleconference with reporters the other day, reiterated the administration's position that the Bush crime family is invoking the so-called state secrets privilege. State secrets privilege. No, this is not communist Soviet Union. This is the United States under the Bush crime family. They are invoking the so-called state secrets privilege in arguing that the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where the constitutionality of the eavesdropping is being challenged, that the Ninth U.S. Circuit must dismiss the cases because to hear them in a court of law would threaten to expose what authorities say is information essential to the nation's security. These rat bastards link everything to the nation's security. Have you noticed that? Now, the Bush crime family has invoked this state secrets privilege defense several times, often during its criminal running of this country. They've used it in spy cases, patent disputes, employment discrimination litigation. Can you believe that? Now, the Bush Justice Department official also said that the lawsuits brought by private citizens should be tossed because these plaintiffs, the private citizens, have no direct proof that they were spied on. And, of course, they can't get the direct proof because it falls under the state secrets privilege. You see how this works? Is this madness? Is this is this total madness? And one of the officials that I'm quoting here said that, quote, "We cannot confirm or deny whether or not that's true," the statement that the lawsuit should be tossed because the plaintiffs have no direct proof they were spied on. Now, keep in mind that earlier this month, within the last 2 weeks, the Democrat-controlled Congress made legal warrantless eavesdropping. with brand new legislation.
Huh?
Now, James, who sent this to me, also included a little email that said, when something can't be constitutionally challenged or questioned in court anymore, then you don't have a U.S. Constitution or a rule of law that applies equally to everyone either. It's amazing. It's almost, I mean, on a certain level of governance in this country, we already have crossed the Rubicon, so to speak, into Fascistan. We really have. The constitutionality of a law, I mean, that's what the federal court system is set up for. Originally, that's the only thing it was set up for. Okay, disputes among the states, or patent laws, or the constitutionality of treaties on the high seas, and so on and so forth. But originally, the federal court system, correct me if I'm wrong, I may be, the federal court system was set up to determine the constitutionality of laws passed by Congress or signed by the president. You know, that quaint, ancient, now dead, checks and balances idea. So the Bush crime family has now declared that not only is it above the law, but the idea that it's above the law cannot be challenged anywhere. And yet, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say impeachment is off the table. What do these people need, these Democrats? What do they need? Oh, well, it's not our country anymore. I guess we'll get it back at some point. Did you see the videotape? Just about everybody's seen it now. The father with a newborn baby tasered by a hospital security guard because he was trying to take home his newborn child. Both the man and the baby went crashing to the floor. A former police officer and criminologist at Florida State, this happened in Houston apparently, at Florida State University said, I've got to wonder what kind of moron would tase an adult holding a baby. It doesn't take rocket science to realize the baby is going to fall. Now, this occurred a few months ago, April 13th. The reason it's coming out now is because there's a lawsuit. And this guy has been charged, the father's been charged with all sorts of things. According to the father, he and his wife felt mistreated by the staff at Women's Hospital of Texas, and they decided to leave. Hospital employees said no, doctors wouldn't allow it. But the man picked up the baby and walked to a bank of elevators, and the elevators wouldn't move because wristband sensors the baby shut the elevators off if anyone takes an infant without permission, which I think, frankly, is a pretty good idea. This was videotaped by security cameras, and the father, because he's got a lawsuit, has a video, and he gave it to the Associated Press. He said his daughter landed on her head. He said the baby continues to suffer ill effects from the fall. I mean, it's not clear whether the baby received any electrical jolt. But this is insane. These rent-a-cops now taser someone who wants to leave a hospital with his newborn? Okay, I don't know all the particulars, but apparently the child was in good health, and the father and the mother didn't like they were being treated. An off-duty Houston police officer working security at the hospital and another security guard can be seen on the surveillance video, arriving at the elevators to try to talk to the father. Within 40 seconds of arriving, the off-duty Houston police officer is holding the taser. He walks around the dad, whispers to the other guard, who moves to the dad's right side, and about a minute later, zoom, they get him.
Wake up!
Enough is enough is enough is enough. Open your eyes.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So this guy in Houston, and again, I don't know. I haven't seen the lawsuit. I wasn't there. All I know is what I saw in the video. You know, maybe this guy's a real jackass. But he's standing here with his baby trying to leave, and these two punks, one an off-duty Houston police officer, the other one a hospital security guard, taser him. He's holding his baby daughter, his little newborn. So anyway, the father drops to the floor. The one guard tasers him. The father drops to the floor. The other guard scoops up the baby and hands the baby to the mother, who is standing nearby in a hospital gown. Now, you can imagine, this woman just gave birth, and she's watching these two fascists taser her husband, who's holding her baby. The father said he never saw the stun gun. He said, quote, "My wife said we want to leave, and then the cop tasered me. He caused me to drop my child," end quote. Now, in a statement in this lawsuit, the hospital said the father was hostile and uncooperative towards staff members who were trying to find out his relationship to the infant when they saw him trying to leave. Well, in the first place, I don't know how they do it in Houston, but here in Atlanta, when your spouse checks in to have a baby, they put a bracelet on you, a bracelet on your spouse, and a bracelet when the baby's born. And they all have to match up. And one of these half-witted morons who now seem to populate every single institution in America, grocery stores, hospitals, post offices, gas stations, who are these aliens who can't do their jobs? Who are these people? Try calling in to get something settled on a bill or explanation of benefits on your health. I don't care what it is, no matter where you go. We have become a nation that is the entire workforce that you have to deal with. I'm not talking about people we don't deal with. I don't even know about them, but the ones we have to deal about, they're morons. They're idiots. So these idiots in the hospital don't look at the man's bracelet. They just call the cops and taser him. Jesus. So the hospital said the father was hostile and uncooperative. They also said that neither the mom or the dad had indicated they wanted a discharge. The statement from the hospital said, quote, "Mr. Lewis became verbally abusive by using vulgar expletives." Oh, well, then shoot him. Hell yeah, shoot him. Shoot him, and if his baby falls to the ground and smashes its newborn head open like a ripe tomato, well, you know, he was using vulgar expletives. The baby deserves to die, right? The statement went on and said, "When Mr. Lewis's behavior became threatening, endangering employees, licensed law enforcement officers follow their professional standards to protect those involved." I'll be damned. So the father was arrested, charged with endangering a child, but a grand jury back in May, this happened in April, back in May, a grand jury declined to indict him on that. But the grand jury did charge him with retaliation, accusing him of making threats against the cop, the off-duty Houston cop. If I were trying to leave a hospital with my newborn and some punk ass came up and told me to stop, and this is my baby, and I'm saying, look, get out of my way. We don't like the way this hospital's. So they charge him with making threats against the cop. Lewis was also charged with a second count of retaliation, alleging he made a threatening call to the cop at his home. Lewis denies both charges. He said he's considering suing the hospital, but has not filed any legal papers. All right. Now, of course, the subtext to this story is that some 11,000 U.S. law enforcement agencies now use tasers. And more they're being used as a convenient, labor-saving device to control uncooperative people. Son of a bitch. A convenient, labor-saving device to control uncooperative people. What is an uncooperative person? Well, in the first place, it's somebody who is exercising or attempting to exercise his former or her former First Amendment rights, the right to peacefully assemble. And when ordered to move by a fascist pig, and the person says, no, I have a right to be here, the pig can then taser the person because they're being uncooperative. And the person may wind up being charged with aiding and abetting the enemy if it turns out that the demonstration might have been against the government, the illegal toy government of Iraq, or in support of the government of Iran, or maybe protesting the treatment of Palestinians or Lebanese, or I don't know, maybe even somebody pissed off because bombers are blowing up Jews in Tel Aviv. You don't know anymore. You don't know anymore. And this is how you drive a population, A, insane, and B, make them very docile. You don't know anymore.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Looks like Don Imus is going to be back on the radio. I know I'm doing a lot of jerkwad stories here tonight, but it seems like I never get a chance to do these, and some of them are just fascinating to me. Like this is the eve of the 30th anniversary of Elvis's death, and he died straining on a commode because he had too many drugs in his body. Thud. And all these people who have made the pilgrimage, like they're going to Bethlehem or to Amritsar, or to Mecca, all these crazy, psychotic Americans who are in unbelievable, record-breaking, triple-digit heat in Memphis, so that what? Are they waiting for him to rise out of the whatever he's buried in? Oh, my God, he was a rock and roll star. Oh, never mind. So anyway, Imus and CBS apparently have settled their differences. Imus was due $40 million, rumor has it, and his final payment was at least $20 million. Oh, boy. $20 million. Who's worth that kind of money who's on rate? Well, Limbaugh, Imus. It's unclear where on the radio Don Imus might be heard next, although look for him to wind up on either ABC in New York, which is Citadel Broadcasting, or Viacom, or Westwood One. But he'll be back. Imus will be back. This is America. And now there's a lawsuit. The center on that girls' basketball team has filed a lawsuit against, oh my God, just about everybody, including Imus, for defamation and libel. I'm not sure what the lawsuit is. I just heard about it today. But somebody like Don Imus, in a country like ours, at a time like this, can pretty much go on the air and say anything. And yes, and he gets the public spanking, and he has to go see Reverend Al, and you know, he does his mea culpas, and he holds an emotional press conference, and his wife comes to his rescue, or in some cases, the husband comes to the wife's rescue. Then there's a lawsuit, and then there's negotiations to end the multi-million dollar contract, and yada yada, blah blah blah, and finally the dust settles, and America has moved on. You know, we've moved on to blonde, white Hollywood posers going to jail for drugs and speeding and drunk driving, and you know, so we forget Don Imus until all of a sudden he pops up again. Article in the New York Times about, hey, guess who's coming back? Sure. Why not? What did he do that was so wrong in America 2007? He used a phrase, trying to be cool, because his mouth-breathing producer used a similar phrase. But what the hell? I mean, this is a country that's decided, ours, to put armed guards on our southern border. No armed guards on the Canadian border. But to give these white rednecks permission to go ahead and patrol our southern border, to do what? Stop the drug pushers, huh? Or the illegal alien Mexican, Honduran, Guatemalan laborers. Unbelievable. So, Don Imus and Elvis, so far tonight. Now, here's a good one. On the Road turns 50. Actually, on September 5th, 1957 is when the book came out. But they're already talking about it. If you've not read On the Road, shame on you. I don't care how old you are. You should have read it, just like you should have read Catch 22, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Catcher in the Rye. On the Road, for sure. Plus a lot of poetry, Mexico City Blues and Dharma Bums and all sorts of stuff that Kerouac wrote. Kerouac and that whole crew of people, everybody from Lawrence Ferlinghetti to Peter Orlovsky and Ginsberg and, oh my God, Michael McClure and just on and on and on. If you haven't read the Beat Poets, then you are not an American. You just are not, well, I shouldn't say you're not American. I should say that your experience or education as an American is not complete. If you can't go back and start reading, read Burroughs, read Naked Lunch, read all this stuff that was written in the 40s and the 50s, post-World War II, all Americans, and whether they were, you know, insane like William Burroughs or failed Catholics like Kerouac or outrageous gay men who celebrated their gaydom like Allen Ginsberg, back at a time when, you know, he could have been shot down on the streets for proclaiming who he was. Go back and read it if you haven't, or go forward and read it. But if you read On the Road, you know about Sal Paradise and Dean Moriarty, who in fact were Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassidy, respectively, as they, you know, floated back and forth across the country, doing their thing, drinking, listening to jazz, talking about the awfulness of the 50s, post-World War II America. The interesting thing, I didn't know this, On the Road still sells about 100,000 copies a year. That's astonishing. That's astonishing. And as the Times said, part of the reason for the novel's staying power is that the pop artists keep referring to it or referencing it. Everybody from Bob Dylan to the Beastie Boys, more recently Hold Steady, an indie rock group, quoted On the Road on its current album. But it's a great book. And what's astonishing to me is, I've said this before, I can't believe it was 25 years ago, but it was in 1982. I went to Boulder, Colorado, University of Colorado, for the 25th anniversary of the publication of On the Road. It was a 10-day event, And I went as a paid attendee, but also as a member of the press. So I just had carte blanche to hang out with everybody, and by God, I did. You know, when you sit around a table, I don't know how I got there, but you sit around a table with Gregory Corso and Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Allen Ginsberg and who else was there? Take your pick. The whole pantheon of beats were there. The 25th anniversary was like a meeting of old world or Old Testament prophets who came back together to see if what they had wrought, what effect what they had written about had on the society. It was an incredible 10 days. Now, I never graduated from college. I've attended about 5 different universities, but to me, that was when I got my degree in English, because I had, you know, I took classes out there with, they had seminars available. You could take a class with Allen Ginsberg or Michael McClure or one of the Berrigan brothers, or not the priests, the Beats. I met Jan Kerouac. Actually met everybody there. The hippies and the Beats and the druggies, they were all there. It was an incredible time. I can't believe that was 25 years ago. So now it's 50 years later. Lawrence Ferlinghetti is, what, 88? Still, I guess, still owns or runs City Lights bookstore in San Francisco. The one time I had time to spend in San Francisco, that's the first place I went, was to City Lights. Couldn't believe it. Claustrophobic as hell in there. So Kerouac. Just had to mention it. 50th anniversary coming up in about, 2 weeks? If you haven't read On the Road, you should. You really should. It's an astonishing book. Who's the guy that wrote In Cold Blood? We just saw the movie. Truman Capote referred to On the Road being the kind of bitchy writer that Capote was. He said, it's not writing, it's typing. I have a feeling they'll be reading On the Road long after Other Voices, Other Rooms, and In Cold Blood have been relegated to Breakfast at Tiffany's, but nobody's going to read that. It's a movie. Who's going to read Breakfast at Tiffany's? You know, I don't know a single human being who has ever read Breakfast at Tiffany's, and I know an entire generation that saw the film. Email from Prairie 2. Hey, Mike, I would trade everything Bush has done. The subject line said Clinton did far more damage. You got to hear the rest of this. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Pop Lewis writes in regarding the Elvis thing. Mike, many people perceive their lives as meaningless. So the 30th commemoration of the king's death, allows escapist folly and the opportunity to have a laugh and a giggle, nothing more. Oh, this is from Peter in Florida. P.S., you still have a hint of a scratchy voice. Yeah, well, that's because I'm trying to breathe air that you can see here in Atlanta. Anyway, Prairie 2 wrote, the subject line, Clinton did far more damage. And then Prairie 2 writes, hey, Mike, I would trade everything Bush has done. If we could take back NAFTA, the WTO, and media consolidation. Without those things, corporate fascism would not be possible. Most of the damage Bush has done can be undone fairly easily, except for all the dead and wounded, of course. But Clinton has so damaged us that we may not have the economy left to do anything about it. Yeah, that's a pretty astute observation there. NAFTA, WTO, and media consolidation, all of which occurred on Clinton's watch, right? It's difficult to compare. You know, I guess the difference is, you know, Clinton was such a nice guy, you know. Hey, I'm Bill Clinton. How are you? Hey, sweetie, come on over here. Bring me that double cheeseburger. What? That's not a double cheeseburger? Oh, my. And what's his name? Bush is just an out-of-control murderer. Out-of-control murderer. I mean, Clinton participated in state-sanctioned murder in Arkansas. Ricky Ray Rector, a convicted killer with an IQ under 60. And Clinton dropped off the campaign trail in when was it, 91, to go back and oversee Mr. Rector's execution. Oh, I know. I'm sure Ricky Ray Rector committed a heinous crime, just something horrible. Probably deserved to die, right? This is from Sharon in Camano Island, Washington. Is that right? Camano Island. Subject line is my theory about Karl Rove's departure. Hey, Mike, I think Karl is getting out of town because Jeff Gannon, the male prostitute White House press plant, has taken Larry Flynt up on his standing $1 million offer for dirt on these weasels. And he is about to expose that his 196 visits to the White House were to see Karl Rove. He was doing the little doughboy. You people are brutal. P.S. Encourage listeners to call their representatives to subpoena Jeff Gannon in place of Karl Rove. He may have inside information, so to speak. What just out of control bunch of listeners, I swear to God. And what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, Rove, naturally, Rove winds up in the one place in America that serves as a right-wing sewer sludge collector, and that's the Limbaugh program. He was there, what was he, there today? He went on Limbaugh's program to attack Senator Hillary Clinton. You know, if this keeps up, I'm going to have to support her just on general principles. You know, the enemy of my enemy and that sort of thing. In an interview with Limbaugh, Rove repeated his characterization of Mrs. Clinton as a, quote, fatally flawed, end quote, candidate, and lashed out at her for saying in her new television ad that Mr. Bush treated some Americans as invisible. Yeah, that's not true, is it, Carl? Rove said that Mrs. Clinton's criticisms of the president showed, quote, a lack of vision on her part. Rove said in the interview with the Pig Man, quote, the fallback position in politics is if you don't know what you want to be about and if you don't know what your vision is, go at somebody else, end quote. Well, Jesus, God in heaven, Carl, you just defined or explained your entire philosophy, you and the twit that sits in the White House. Rove also called Senator Clinton's record on healthcare issues spotty and poor and asserted that she had been, quote, less than supportive of American troops. Well, sure, go do that. That's good, Carl. You evil little snot. He also took aim at her positions on a variety of anti-terrorism measures the administration supports. I wish somebody would tell me what Hillary Clinton has not supported that Bush has. Huh? Rove being interviewed by the foul-smelling and getting enormous, more enormous every day, Rush Limbaugh. Rove said, quote, "I'm a little bit surprised that somebody with a record so weak on these military things would somehow deign to lecture this president, who is very popular among the military and military families because they see him as a strong commander-in-chief who supports them, loves them, and gives them everything they need and want," end quote. My God, I mean, what kind of a low-grade moron cannot understand how many lies exist in that one sentence? A commander-in-chief who supports them? Who loves them? Who gives them everything they need? Who gives them everything they want? Oh my God. Well, it is not surprising that he wound up in the sewer where all the sludge and human excrement that funnels through American media and government eventually winds up, and that's the smelly Rush Limbaugh's program. All right, quick break here. Well, actually, it's about 6 minutes long, so if you want to get up, walk around the room, talk among yourselves, go ahead. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. A couple of emails here regarding what... Excuse me. Sound like somebody's trying to strangle me. I think someone is. This is from Susan. Subject line, Breakfast at Tiffany's. Hi, Mike. I'm a Truman Capote fan, and I think that In Cold Blood is a stunning work. I agree. So I suggested my book club read Breakfast at Tiffany's. Therefore, at least one, albeit small, group in the San Francisco Bay Area has, in fact, read Breakfast at Tiffany's. All right, Susan. You're the only person or group I know that's read it, though. Subject line, I remember Kerouac and the rest. I reread on the road recently. This is from P. P writes, I feel lost today because... Where are people of that same quality, referring to the writers? Everyone today seems either too scared to be rebellious or too PC and timid. Bygone era. By the way, there is a collection of Kerouac's readings, which he recorded on iTunes, and his reading of On the Road in unabridged form. Thanks, P. That's interesting. iTunes, Kerouac. From subject line, On the Road as Typing, from Bill in Sausalito. Mike, Capote's right if you've ever seen the original manuscript. Obviously, Kerouac was a stone speed freak. The manuscript is solid type. That's side to side with virtually no margins. The manuscript is an assemblage of the pages glued end to end for feeding through his typewriter nonstop. Yeah, but I don't think that's what Capote meant. Capote, I think Capote was just trying to be kind of a little pissant. I really do. But yeah, I know. He wrote it that way. He wanted to get it out. And I think it's important to remember that Kerouac's writing, to me anyway, was more prose poetry than strictly prose. And Kerouac was one hell of a poet. That's, you know, a lot of people know him as a poet rather than as a prose writer. Last one. Subject line, Kerouac and Capote. This is from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Yeah, sure it's Michael. I'm sure it's one of those aliens that landed there back in 47. Anywhere, Michael, or the person that owns his body, writes, Capote mentions that line about typing on television as if it were his own, but I think, or mentioned the line on television as if it were his own, but I think that he stole it. The first in-print use of the line, "That's typing, not writing," was in the 1957 review of On the Road, in Partisan Review, by guess who? Our old friend, the godfather of neoconservatism, Norman Pedoritz. It's a small world, isn't it? And then this from Stephen in Fort Lewis, Washington. Maybe I shouldn't have given location, Stephen. Subject line, Iraq slaughter. Mike, don't be surprised if the Iraq slaughter was U.S.-backed. It makes no sense. Al-Qaeda attacking in northwest Iraq. The support for this war is vanishing. I've done two tours in Iraq and just got back. I've seen a change in the Iraqi people. They want us gone. They've had enough. They want to control and run their own country. Can you blame them? The U.S. government would do anything to sway support for the war, even if it means killing innocent Iraqis. Sad? Yes. Stephen. And what else? A couple more here, folks. Then we're going to do some phone calls. Yeah, you always say that, don't you? Apparently, the Bush administration is getting ready to declare Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps a foreign terrorist organization. These bastards just, oh God, they just, these Bush thugs just want to send more people to their deaths, don't they? Huh? They just want to send more and more and more people to die. So they're going to declare a division of the Iranian military, the Revolutionary Guards, to be a foreign terrorist organization. Dana Perino said, too much cappuccino. Perino made the announcement, said that the Treasury and State Department would be the lead agencies in the decision. The Treasury? Yeah. Remember all those directives that Bush signed? By naming them a foreign terrorist organization, I don't know what that does, but the Treasury and State Department will take the lead. And too much cappuccino. Perino said that Bush himself, quote, doesn't actually have to take any action, end quote, to make it official. That's probably because the directives are already signed, already official. You know, Bush has been calling attention to what the propaganda says is an active role by the Revolutionary Guard in providing munitions and training and other support to Shiite militants who've been attacking American troops in Iraq, which doesn't make any sense. Bush said of Iran during a news conference last Thursday, quote, when we catch you playing a non-constructive role, there will be a price to pay, unquote. Don't you love the way he talks? When we catch you playing. Unbelievable stuff. Cheney and the rest of these right-wing nuts just want to see more Americans go into battle to kill or be killed. And I think the Iran thing, I guess that would be an Air Force or naval operation. Naval aviators. Think for a second. This is from Capitol Hill Blue yesterday. But the writer says, if you really want to understand what's happening to our troops in Iraq, let me paraphrase what I read earlier at another site. Think of China invading your city, suburb, town, or village, and telling you how to act, how to drive, when to shop, what to do with no electricity, no medicine, no health care, no schools, no government, no security, no water. Now, add hundreds of thousands of weapons to this mix, placed in your hands, loaded and ready to shoot, and think. How would you react to the invading, occupying forces? Yeah. And now I heard somebody sent me an email that said LA Times is going to be reporting or has reported that the report that is due from General David Petraeus regarding the effectiveness and the success or lack thereof of the surge that report, which is due, what, the middle of September, apparently has already been written by White House staff, and the Petraeus will merely be asked to sign off on it. Now, I don't think there's any question that that's not true. Or, I don't think there's any question. Yeah, that's not true. I think it is true. Petraeus is a suck-up. I think that's very obvious. He is where he is because he didn't have the honor and the dignity, as so many flag rank officers have, to retire, take early retirement, and get out of Cheney's military. Petraeus wanted that fourth star, and by God, he got it. But Petraeus, I do believe, is one of those generals, from what I've seen, from what I've read, from what I've heard, he's one of those career military officers who cares not a tinker's damn, not really, about his troops, who cares not a tinker's damn about the tactics or strategies, but who is in the military, on the fast track, because somebody above him liked him and put him on the fast track, and that general, whether it's Petraeus or others, and we know there have been many of these types of military officers, that general then rewrites the book on Cover Your Ass. Rewrites it, lives it, sends his civilian overlords anything they want to hear, makes any promise, denies any reality. He is the ultimate go-along, get-along. Now, where do I get that information? From military sites, from military blogs, from people who are serving under this guy. What do I know?
Ears ringing from the battle of fire, the tired warrior rings of the black falcon or the little sparrow, the healing light or the flash of a barrel.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, from Capitol Hill Blue yesterday... The writer, Rob Cazales, is pointing out how there is a massive PR move on right now by the Bush crime family to convince Americans that the surge, the murder in Iraq, the murder of our people and the murder of their people, is wondrous and working. Rob writes, the administration has sent a shadow army of congressmen, senators, journalists, political scientists, and bloviating talking heads to listen, and they've all been spoon-fed just what Bush and Petraeus want them to see, hand-picked, well-practiced, well-spoken, gung-ho military folks who uniformly recite their lines perfectly. And the lines are, quote, the surge is working, all we need is a little time, and the support of from loyal Americans in Congress. Congress is the only thing that can stop us from complete victory now. And apparently, more than 600 individuals and journalists have received a junket to the Green Zone in Baghdad in just the last 4 weeks. And then, as Rob writes, each of them are scheduled to appear on CNN, fake news, MSNBC, C-SPAN, Rush, Sean, and Michelle, and other compliant loudspeakers of the new and improved White House policy. In the meantime, on Tuesday, we lost 5 U.S. troops. On Monday, 4. Yesterday, 9. Worse yet, close to 275 Iraqis died in an orchestrated series of truck bombs. A moderate Shia politician was assassinated. Moderate Sunni guards have been murdered. In summary, the reality on the ground is far worse than the White House would like you to know. U.S. deaths are reaching all-time highs, with 4 dead per day, each day, this month alone. Iraqi dead aren't counted. Now, this is what you'll hear from George Bush and the hundreds of so-called reporters, politicians, and experts in the days to come. You'll hear the surge is working. Basra is a great success story. We see real progress throughout Iraq. If we stop now, we guarantee defeat. If we continue, we will win. Only Congress can stop us from achieving a very reachable victory. The American people don't want defeat. We are winners. We support winners. And our troops are the real winners. If you could see the intel I saw, you would realize that this is going our way. There are growing pains politically, but 17 million voted and their parliament passed 66 serious bills along with the Constitution. Now that's victory. Progress is everywhere you look. The sad part is all of what I just listed for you is total bat squeeze. In fact, the whole political system there has collapsed. I open up the New York Times today and I see that Ahmadinejad of Iran is meeting with Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan. We all, last week or 10 days ago, Maliki was meeting with Ahmadinejad of Iran. And yet the Bush crime family continues to operate in this fantasy world that somehow the Iranians are terrorists. No, the Americans are the terrorists. When you have three countries side by side, Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan, all of which have felt the lash, the military lash of the United States over the past 5 decades, repeatedly, over and over again. They've had their governments overthrown. They've had their leaders assassinated. They've had their countries destabilized. They've had their civilian population detained, arrested, tortured, and thrown into unmarked prisons and graves. And there's a wonder that these people don't say, please, before we kill all of you, get out of our countries. It's astonishing. But no, we're going to win. We're going to win. Huh? And again, that analogy, we've talked about that before a long time ago. Think of a country invading your city and taking everything away from you. Nothing works. Your kids can't go to school. You can't find decent groceries. There's no electricity. You're roasting in the summer, freezing to death in the winter. There's no medicine. There's no health care, no schools. No security, no water. You don't have a government to complain to because what little government there is nothing more than a puppet regime that will be gone as soon as the military supporting it is gone. But there's thousands of weapons, and you have them, and they're loaded, and an endless supply of ammunition, and you're ready to shoot. What are you going to do? Huh? What are you going to do? Are you going to sit back and wait for General David Petraeus to offer some bogus report to the American media that can be masticated and chewed on, and I know I'm redundant, and turned into a great big ball of soft cud so that we Americans can swallow it? Is that what you're going to do? My shaking hand is gonna be. Or are you going to pick up a weapon and kill somebody?
Your host for A Peant's Friant's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Looks like we're in for next to 26 before the hour. We have been talking here for about an hour and a half about the departure of Karl Rove. An amicable separation between Mr. Rove and Mr. Bush, to be sure. God only knows what this weasel is going to be doing now, further eroding our political system, eating at it from the inside, destroying everything he can put his clammy little hands on. Oh, these people make me so sick, but we kind of have to talk about it, I guess, right? Back to your calls. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Alex, welcome to the program.
I picked up this morning the paper this morning, and I was singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, where does he go from here? And then I wasn't so celebratory.
Yeah, he could still do a lot of damage.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe he's going to just try to, you know, dissuade his situation and get away from the, executive privilege thing and just kind of slip away.
Yeah, well, from what I read today in the Times, Bush and Rove are going to continue to claim protection for Mr. Rove under executive privilege and continue to fight any attempts to get this rat bastard to testify before Congress.
I also picked up in the paper today, there was in the, where people write in and stuff like that, an article that they've seen the ghost of Pat Nixon in the White House.
The ghost of Pat Nixon?
Yeah, in the White House. And she's thanking George for, you know, at least making his administration look worse than the Nixon administration.
All right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, Alex. I really wouldn't. Alex, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. Okay. Let's see here. Gene is calling from Santa Rosa, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, this Rove thing really is something. Thanks for talking about it. I just cringe when I hear Rove
Kathy,
called
are you there?
A genius.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He can only be called a genius if we put the word evil in front of it, you know.
Well,
can you hear
yeah,
me,
even
Atlanta,
then,
Atlanta?
Even with that kind of a qualifier, I just...
But he isn't into competition or winning. He undermines them. He's into theft.
He's
into stealing elections, stealing
sure.
the people's government and money. And I think this, even this thing that his resignation or whatever this is like an orchestration of the theft of headlines.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he always does.
Mm-hmm.
And because like right now, the congressmen have gone home, and they're supposed to hear complaints from their constituents. It might take the wind out of some people's sails. I hope it doesn't. I hope they say the most evil person is still around. He's still going to be around. Karen Hughes showed up again.
Oh, God.
Rove
yeah.
can't be really far.
Yeah, I guess I'm like you. I'm not overly confident that this person has left the political scene to the extent where he can't continue to do extreme damage like he has for the past, in Texas and in the United States, he has for the past 34 years, according to what they've said. They've known each other for 34 years, and one can only guess at how much damage a thug like Rove and a moron like Bush can do when they're given unchecked, unbridled, unrestricted power.
And they're a really small group of scammers. You know, when you really count them, you can count them like on your fingers and toes, all this cabal. And they can't trust very many people. They
mm-hmm.
they can only trust their few brother criminals in the scams. So, I don't think they've scammed, you know, with the UN and even killing more people than Hurricane Katrina by mm-hmm. making a non-rescue. They have to cover their tails, and he's not going to go far. I can't see it.
Well, it's I don't know. I don't know. I just know that I'm glad I'm glad what? I don't know. Gene, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I don't know what I'm glad. I'm really not glad about anything about the Roe resignation. A Bush resignation might be reason for celebration. Or Cheney getting too close to a microwave oven and having his chest catch on fire might be reason for a celebration. But, you know, Roe, what is Roe? He's a dirty trickster. He's a liar. He's a punk. And so he's gone. But the damage that he did to my country and to my system of self-governance, as flawed as it was, the damage this guy has done is incalculable. I mean, I can't... Where do you start? Do you start with the touchscreen voting machines? Do you start with suppression of vote counting in Florida 7 years ago? Do you start with plans to invade a third world beat to hell country that has nothing to do with an engineered attack on this country? I mean, where do you begin? Do you begin with the destruction of oversight in the regulatory agencies that are absolutely necessary in order to keep capitalism from devouring an entire population? Where do you begin? I mean, there is so much that Roe and Bush are responsible for. Just little things like that are not so little. Cutting back on the amount of money to go to the Forestry Service for fire prevention and fighting forest fires, and major dramatic cuts, millions, tens of millions of dollars, and look what has happened. Gutting police agencies, local policing agencies, you know, a cop on the beat, that sort of thing. A patrolman or a patrol woman, you know, a cop out there patrolling. And what do we see now? Crime is starting to just skyrocket. Only the crime in this country is getting more and more vicious. Executing people on the street. These rat bastards, oh my God, I hate them. Where do you start describing the damage that this crime family, with its chief political operative, Karl Rove, has done to America, to our cities, to everything, to the social fabric that, as frayed and coming apart as it is, was supposed to still try, attempt at least to some degree to hold us together. And what have they done? They've stepped up with knives and scissors and lighter fluid and matches and tried to burn it, rip it, shred it. Turn gays against straights, turn straights against gays, Christian against Jew, Jew against Muslim, wealthy against working class, just everything. Just destroy it. Divide and conquer. Divide. Set people against each other. Tell them lies. Make them fearful. Terrify them. Well, if you don't vote for the Republicans, Osama bin Laden's going to rape your mother. Or worse. Astonishing. And there are piglets out there in media, especially on television, who are referring to this monster as a genius. Anytime I stop and, you know, just take a deep breath and say, come on, Malloy, things are not as bad as you think they are, especially with the media. There's, you know, and then I hear what I've heard in the past 24 hours and I think, Jesus, God, not only is it as bad as I think it is much worse. How can anyone who presents themselves as a journalist, even the kind of posers and fakes and halfwits that populate television, but how can anyone who presents themselves as a journalist refer to Karl Rove as anything other than an absolute, utter destroyer of our system? Our society, our means of self-government, but especially our political system. It's astonishing. Chris Matthews or any of these people, I don't know why I'm picking on him. Somebody sent me a video showing Chris Matthews praising this rat bastard. Now, I realize that Chris Matthews is borderline personality disorder. He deals with it constantly. God only knows how many fistfuls of drugs he takes every day. But why in the name of God would he be praising someone who has destroyed the system to the extent that he has? I can't get my mind around that at all. I find that astonishing. We'll take a break here and come back and take your calls. Who do we have here? Evan and John and John and Carla and Jake. All right. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
Oh, yes. A home. It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your calls. Jake is calling from Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
So, you know, there is cause for celebration. MC Rowe has left the building, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was forced out. If you listen to that press conference, he was blubbering. He was crying. You know, their close relationship that they've cultivated over all these decades, him and W. You know, I know Karl Rove doesn't want to leave his protege behind, but it's time. You know, and he had to go because there's another shoe about ready to drop on Rove. This whole thing with the attorney firings, you know, he's going to have to go in front of Congress. And, you know, obviously just like Scooter Libby, commit perjury and be pardoned by Bush. So he had to get out of the White House at some point.
Can you think of anything positive that Karl Rove did in 8 years? Positive for America?
Yeah, destroying the Republican Party. I mean, think about it. This guy, he wanted to create a permanent Republican majority, you know, by hook or crook, through the, you know, the electronic voting and all that kind of stuff. Well, it's backfired. And now it's going to be a permanent Republican minority. And if you look at it, what I think it's about is about playing to the base. You know, Karl Rove was all about playing to the base. The problem is the Democratic base has been growing, and especially after all this anti-immigrant, you know, racist stuff the Republican Party has been up to, the Latino vote's totally swinging to the Democratic side. So if you play to the base, the long-term prospects for the Democratic Party are good. The Republican Party looks like it's going to be the minority for a long time.
Well, I hope so. My idea of bliss, though, would be to see the Republican Party go the way of the Bull Moose Party, just disappear. Jesus God. I mean, what a waste of time, energy, effort. It's destructive. It's anti-American. The Republican Party is anti-democracy. It's anti-freedom and liberty and privacy. And I can't think of an organization that anyone could put together that would be more detrimental to the idea of self-government government and the U.S. Constitution than the Republican Party. And Karl Rove has been one of the architects and engineers in turning the Republican Party into a collection of thugs, miscreants, liars, and fraudmeisters. So I think you're right, Jake. I think the one good thing he's done is guarantee that the Republican Party is going to die.
That's right. And under Bush and Rove, the Republican Party, it's no longer a political party. Really, it's more like a cult. And at this point, you know, the Republican Party is like a death cult. And I say, you're right, just let it die.
Let it die indeed. Jake, thanks a lot for checking in, pal. I appreciate your call. Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening via the internet. Evan, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Hey, I was listening to NPR. I know I should have been listening to Nova M, but just, you know, switch it up for just a moment.
That's okay.
And I was listening to this Tell Me More with Michelle Martin. And, I mean, I've heard her before, and usually she's, you know, she's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But she said she was interviewing an assistant to Karl Rove on her show. And that's the other thing. She didn't have a critical, she didn't have anybody representing the other side, our side. She had a friend of his on there, an associate of his. And she said that as far as leaking Valerie Wilson's name, the allegation that Rove had a part in it was never substantiated. That's what the host said. That's what Michelle Martin said. And that threw me for a loop because, I mean, that's just so, I mean, just so easily turned over. I mean,
it's very easy to answer that question or that accusation just by simply saying, When you have a group of thugs and thieves who are protecting each other and using every instrument they can possibly use that was set up in our Constitution to protect the good guys, not the bastards, but the good guys. And when you have liars and miscreants and thugs who are diverting attention and thwarting an investigation, why, of course, no one is ever going to be able to pin anything on Karl Rove. I mean, nobody was ever able to pin anything on Al Capone. He went to prison for income tax evasion, for God's sake.
But they were, I mean, we were able to pin that on Rove. I wrote her back because I had to write her about this. She was just so far off base. And mm-hmm. I referred her over to Fire Dog Lake, where, I mean, they had, I sent her the link. And
well, so many of the commentators, don't you think, so many of the commentators of NPR are nothing but little right-wing shills. They're, you know, NPR is terrified that they're going to be accused of being part of the liberal media, so they've become more and more and more right-wing.
That's for sure.
Well, I'm glad you wrote to her. If you get an answer, Evan, let me know, okay?
I might get an answer. And we're at 3699 as far as troops dead in Iraq now. 3,699.
I think I saw today that it's at 3,700. Isn't that disgusting? It's just
awful.
Just awful. Evan, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. John is calling from from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Great. Thoroughly enjoying the show. As usual, when I turn to your show, it seems like all I ever hear is you and your listeners doing nothing but spewing hate and name-calling. And
yeah, that's true. Hold on a second, John. I got to take a break here, so stick around, and we'll listen to what you have to say when we come back after the break, if you're still there. This is NOVAM Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Hey, welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. If you haven't figured it out yet, we were off the air there for about 20 minutes. Here in Atlanta, not only am I struggling to breathe, but we're also having rolling brownouts. We had a temperature here of 102 today. It's supposed to be even hotter tomorrow, and record demands on Georgia Power. They're going to have to build another nuclear plant, I guess. The odd part is nobody noticed. Nobody realized. I didn't get a single email, I don't think. I haven't checked to say, hey, Malloy, is this live or is it Memorex? So anyway, we're back live on Wednesday evening at 7:30 past the hour. Again, sorry about that, but that is that's even more incredible than an act of God. It's an act of Georgia Power. Georgia Power has been cutting back. I guess that's what they call a brownout. They roll it through North Georgia where power goes off for certain areas, you know, for a couple, 3-4 minutes. I think the outside temperature right now is still in the 90s. So that's what happened. Oh, wait a minute. I got an email here from somebody that said, no, we knew you were off the air. We could hear you in the background. Oh, great. Well, that's because of the magic that our crack engineer in Phoenix, Ian Huff, and our exemplary producer here in Atlanta, Catherine Bay, you know, they got out the spit, the string, the rubber bands, the baling wire, and put this sucker back together. We have some changes coming. When are we getting our guests? September 8th, we're having someone come in here, an engineering whiz, to try to take care of some of this. Although I don't know what you can do when you have a power brownout. There's really nothing you can do except to kick back and wait for the now you know. I was going to make a bad joke about the Iraqis. Forget it. But we're back live. So again, though, I'm stunned that nobody sent emails about, hey, what happened? I was listening to the segment that Ian was playing from last night, and it was the segment where we were going into the break, and the little right-wing geek called. And I said, wait, let me put you on hold. I come back, and we'll talk. So anyway, here we are. All right, let's do some phone calls while we still have power. I don't know what will happen over the next 51 minutes. This program is scheduled to be on the air. I just know that it's hotter than 10 hells here in Atlanta. It's going to go on. And even though we're in the deep south, 102, 103, 104, heat indexes of 109, 111 is just not something that the power companies here can deal with. Too many people in the metro Atlanta area. We're over 5 million, and it's just too big. To your phone calls, Chris is calling from Oakland, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I want to take issue with Chris Matthews and whoever else seems to think Karl Rove is a genius.
All right, go ahead.
Because one of the common refrains we've heard over and over with regard to this the Valerie Plame incident is that we may never know how many people were affected, how many agents, how many contacts, how many operatives or what have you were affected or possibly compromised or hurt or killed. But we may never know, but I know one agency that probably has a pretty good idea, and coincidentally, that's probably one agency, or if not the one agency in our government, that I would not want to have really upset with me.
Right, right.
So, I mean, everybody might think he's a genius, and the people in this administration might be arrogant and think they're untouchable, but I think the comment was once made to Jimmy Carter. I heard that he was one time trying to get information or something, and it was told by, I think it was probably the director at the time, look, you're here for 4 years. We're here forever, so we're really calling the shots as far as what you know and what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, everybody might think Karl Rove is a genius, but to tell you the truth, I would not want to be Karl Rove right now, you know? So if it would not surprise me if within the next 5 years he meets with some untimely, unexplained, mysterious end, you know? Because, like I said, the CIA is not somebody I think we should screw with, for better or worse.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And you present a very interesting point of view there, Chris. Well, all I can say is one can hope, right? Hello? Chris? I don't know what happened to Chris. We lost Chris. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate your checking in. Thomas is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Thomas.
Hello.
Hey, Thomas.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Yeah, I'm convinced 100% that if we were to pull out tomorrow morning, and I'm not talking about the periphery, but if we just totally removed 100% of our forces and came back to the United States, everything would fall into place. They'd take care of themselves. Everything would improve. They'd be able to go back to their country, the ones that have been displaced, and the UN would help them out. There'd be other people in the world. I'm so sure of that, that we've committed atrocities there. We've killed innocent Iraqis. They didn't deserve that. What if 22 crazed Americans hijacked a couple of Swiss planes and flew through some of those Swiss bank buildings? Do you think we'd want them to attack? So don't know. We'd be telling them they have nothing to do with us. They were just crazed hijackers, had nothing to do with the country, the United States, being against them. And then what if they were advanced and they came in and they had more weaponry and we were, I think it's not true that they say that they love us there, that they like us. It goes against human nature. I mean, we would not want someone occupying our country.
No, absolutely not.
So no matter what they say in the news.
And Thomas, you're correct, of course. The only thing I would add to what you're saying is that it's not just been 4 years, or are we into five now, of this Iraq war and occupation and destruction of the country. Keep in mind that this goes back to, what, 1991? I mean, this is a 16-year-long siege of this country. Embargoes, cutting off their funds, their assets, destroying their infrastructure, killing their people. I mean, this has been going on forever, it seems like. It's actually been going on for 16 years. So for there's probably some truth to what you're saying. If the U.S. military and what remaining allies we have there, the Brits are finally starting to realize the insanity of this. The new prime minister, I think, has just decided, you know, that Bush is insane. I think Blair may have known it, but decided to play along, I guess, just to see how weird the cartoon could get. But Gordon Brown understands that Bush is a madman and wants no part of it and is bailing out. But I tend to agree with you. If we were to get out, I think the Iraqis would probably settle their own differences. I'm so tired of hearing that there would be a bloodbath in that country if we leave. What the hell has gone on there for the past 16 years? And it's going to continue to go on for the next, 200,000 years? Because don't forget, we have, as a result of Gulf War I, Pappy Bush, we have utterly and absolutely saturated the country with depleted uranium. It's, you know, if at some point, 150 years from now, there are human beings left and they're still writing and writing histories, the history of the United States' involvement with Iraq is going to show as one of the most vicious, violent chapters. It's going to rank up there with Pol Pot. It's going to rank with Hitler and the murderous attacks that he waged against other countries. It's going to rank up there with Stalin. I mean, what we've done to Iraq is an atrocity.
Our leaders say it's of no concern to us. As long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff. For the love of oil, we lost 4,000 people. For the love of oil, how many more will die? For the love of oil, we're roasting our green planet. It's not worth all the tears I've had to cry. For
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Maybe it's not a brownout. A couple of you have suggested that it's NSA tampering. You know, that's the weird thing. Three or four years ago, I would have said, oh, nonsense, come on, take off your tinfoil hat, relax, we got power problems. But it happens so often with this program. And we do not have Mickey Mouse equipment here. We have state-of-the-art equipment. It is not, you know, I wonder sometimes. I really, really do. We make jokes about it. But I wonder. Now, I don't like to think about it because that elevates the importance of this program to something other than what it is. Just, you know, a bunch of liberals sitting around talking. And I just don't think the Bush crime family gives a damn whether we exist or not. I really don't. But wouldn't it be odd if they did? Back to your phone calls. Carol is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, Carol.
Hey, you know, I've thought that too. Mike, it's so easy to do.
Oh, it is. I know it is, yeah.
So why not? I mean, and frankly, you and a handful of other, a few fingers on a hand of other people around the country at Progressive Radio are providing a blowhole against the buildup of pressure from these, you know, murdering thugs. And your voice is powerful.
Well, I don't know. I hate to think that our little old program would cause the NSA so much grief that they might interfere with it. And I can't go there. But anyway, the thought does cross my mind because it crosses the mind of some of the listeners who send us emails. And I think, can't be. But anyway, what you really called about.
Yeah, well, I was thinking maybe it was those Enron brownies that had snuck back or something. You know, I'm in California. I remember the brownouts when Enron was going But that isn't what I called about. You know, first of all, I hope you're air-conditioned.
oh, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. But the air conditioning doesn't work all that well.
Uh-oh.
And I'm sure people around the country have the same problem. It's not just here in Atlanta. I've got a new game I play when I wake up in the morning. I immediately log on, go to weather.com, and start checking weather reports from around the country and what the predictions are. And good God, does anyone realize what's happening this summer?
Yeah.
And then when you leave the U.S., And take a look at global climate, it's just...
England is now New Orleans.
And Bangladesh is now Atlantis.
And Peru this afternoon just got hit by 3 7-point earthquakes. You know, I got my tinfoil hat on.
Well, me too.
I hear you breathing the particulate matter too. But what I called about was a while back I called you about, just a little joke. Do you think that maybe Rove is going to vacation in Paraguay and then, you know, come back and work behind the scenes? But what I really called about was Cindy Sheehan has come out and has made a claim that she's really sick and tired of Nancy Pelosi, which
right.
I am too,
right.
And she's going to run against her. And I wondered what you thought about that. And also, I called you once about the walkout that's going to happen. Remember you were talking about
everything stop?
Yes,
yeah.
Because Ray Taliaferro in San Francisco announced last week that there are plans and they're national plans to do this. And I wondered if you'd heard anything about Cindy Sheehan and also about
About Cindy Sheehan. And as far as Cindy Sheehan running against Nancy Pelosi, I think it's a good idea for anyone to demonstrate their displeasure with a politician by running against that politician. I think that's great. That's what at one time made the country great. Not people saying, "Well, I wish somebody would run against him or run against her," or you know, I wish that person would retire. That's the easy way. That's what I say. Somebody like Sheehan or somebody else who says, "No, I'm tired of this. I'm going to run against this thug."
Do you think that Cindy Sheehan's got enough power?
I don't know Pelosi's district. I don't know how liberal it is, how anti-war it is. I do know Alexander Coburn has something in the current issue of The Nation about how the Democrats now, it only took him 6 months, but they have failed miserably to deliver on anything that the American public put them in office to do. Nothing. They've done nothing.
That's right.
They got the minimum wage up 25 cents for the next couple, 3 years. Big whoop. So what they were elected to do, they have not done. I think Cindy Sheehan should run. I think you should run. Carol, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot for checking in, okay?
Bye.
All right, appreciate your call. We'll be back after the break. Really, I'm Mike Malloy.
Chains. You can run out your rules, but you know you can't outrun a history train.
Justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
I used to like this song. It's just too, it's just... Granted, it's loaded with paranoia, but it has a whole different meaning now, doesn't it? Back to your phone calls. Dave is calling from California. Dave is listening via the Internet. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Keep up the good work, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to mention something about these fears of the so-called federal police.
All right.
All these brown shirts and this talk that's been going on the Internet and stuff. But first, I wanted to mention... a word about Mr. Kenneth Starr. Carl Rove. He's, they should be brothers, the two little pasty-faced little punks. I mean, those are the
really?
Guys that were slapped around the schoolyard, you know, when they were in elementary school. That's why they are the way they are today.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, yeah, well, look at them. Talk about a couple of punks. But Karl Rove hasn't gone anywhere, Mike. He's slithered back to Texas into his little slime hole, and he's just going to keep up his corruption and do everything he can to, you know, destroy the United States of America.
Well, I think you're right. You're absolutely right. He's gone nowhere. He's just out of the White House, out of the Oval Office. But
the people in Texas, I don't know if they know it or not, but he has yanked the carpet of democracy out from under the people of Texas. I don't know if those rednecks down there are aware of that or not. Do you think they are, Mike?
Well, no, wait, Dave. You know, there's some really good people in Texas, all right?
I'm sure there are.
Or you talk about the morons.
I'm talking about Karl Rove has destroyed democracy in Texas. And you know, what are these guys going to do about it? They don't sound like they're doing anything about it. He's redistricted the place and turned democracy into just a corruption of election. They're going to be the next ones, you know, with the votes and all this stuff. You know, the point I wanted to make, 2 points quickly, Mike, is number one, What they need to do is keep investigating these guys and do not indict them until they are out of office. That way there will be no pardons. Okay?
Well, that's,
and after they're indicted and found guilty of all these crimes, mm-hmm. just extradite them to Germany. Send Karl Rove and Cheney to Germany and find out how long they last over there.
Now, why Germany?
Within about 3 or 4 months, they would be hung by the neck until dead.
Well, why Germany? What?
Because they have indictments against them for war crimes, international war crimes.
As
we did against the German, they're not.
Yeah,
against Hitler and those guys.
Against Rove?
All of them. Especially Rumsfeld and Cheney.
Oh, Rumsfeld
and Cheney especially. I don't know about
true.
Rove.
That's true.
I'm sure he'd be, he's in on it.
Yeah, I misheard you. I thought you said Rove. Yep. You actually said Rumsfeld. All right, that's a good idea. Dave, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I'd like to see, I remember how they pursued General Pinochet all around the world. And finally, they grabbed him in Spain, or was it the U.K.? Doesn't matter. Don't email me. But, they finally sent him back home. And, of course, he had the decency to die before anything, not the decency, but he had, what am I trying to say? I have no idea. Henry Kissinger is a wanted man. I think Kissinger, if he travels to one of 7 or 8, maybe more foreign countries right now, there are warrants out for him. It's just stupefying. When I was younger, when I was a teenager in my 20s, 30s, whatever, and Interpol was a big deal back then. I don't know how many of you remember Interpol, but the International Police Force, so to speak, it was designed to catch criminals who hopped across international borders with impunity. And Interpol was a policing agency that would track people down, and then working in tandem with the government of whatever country or jurisdiction that they caught these international criminals, they would arrest them, and they would be held in the host country jail or prison, and then extradited back to the country that had originally issued warrants for these people. You never hear about Interpol anymore. Has it been disbanded? I have no idea. I have no idea. But wouldn't it be cool if Interpol would start shadowing some of our war criminals? When I used to know about Interpol, I thought it was just, I have to admit, very glamorous, very adventuresome, very kind of like something you would see in a film. The glamour of a job of going after international criminals and bringing them to justice. And now here we are where the international criminals are our people. That's the part that is stunning to me. You know, being a kid who did a lot of growing up in the 50s, we were still tracking Nazis back then, Nazi war criminals. We were still tracking international jewel thieves and thugs and murderers and people who ran gas chambers and extrajudicial executions and that sort of thing. And I thought Interpol was just wonderful because they were tracking people down. And I didn't realize at the time, of course, who did, out here among the great unwashed, that our CIA, at the same time Interpol was tracking people down, our CIA was overthrowing governments and assassinating people. It's unbelievable. Just unbelievable. But here we are now. There is no Cold War. There's something much worse, and that's this unstated war for oil and the ambitions of the neocons that run this government to establish American hegemony over every part of the world, which is impossible. It's an impossibility. Who thinks this stuff? Who comes up with this? Okay, maybe in the days of Alexander the Great it was possible. Huh? Or Julius Caesar, or Genghis Khan, or Darius. Who else? But certainly not now. Man. So now we've, the Bush crime family, not we, Jesus, the Bush crime family has decided to designate a major part of the Iranian military as a foreign terrorist organization. a foreign terrorist organization, why not designate the U.S. Army Airborne as a terrorist organization, or the SEALs, or any one of our special forces operations? Why not designate? What would happen if a company would our country would designate our highly trained elite military forces as a terrorist organization? Huh? What would we do? It's crazy. It's just crazy. And I think military planners, I'm not talking about the worms and weasels that infest the White House, but the real military, and I'm not talking about General Petraeus or people like that, but real military planners, people who understand weapons and tactics, people who understand command and control, people who understand the difference between strategies and tactics, understand that the Iranian Republican Guard is not the same as the Iraqi Republican Guard was during Gulf War I. The Iranian Republican Guard is a highly trained military organization that is not going to run down some highway of death fleeing from American forces or any forces. They're not going to do it. And I think that's one of the reasons that slowly but surely the command and control for our forces in that part of the world is being turned over not to Army, not to Marines, but to Air Force and Navy. Because if this psychopath in the White House and his puppet, George Bush, ever do decide to attack Iran, it's not going to be with ground forces. You know that as well as I do. It's going to be with U.S. and Israeli Air Force and naval attack. You know, I'd much rather be sitting around right now talking about, we are just 15 minutes away from the real 30th anniversary of Elvis's death. I'd much rather be talking about that, you know, from a nostalgia point of view. Playing Elvis records, or maybe better yet, reading Ferlinghetti's Christ Climb Down. That would be fun to read tonight. Or Howl, the anthem of young people in the Beat Generation. Huh? But no, we're talking about this. And we'll continue to talk about it right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free.
About 10 before the hour. Sorry about the rolling brownout tonight that cascaded across the Atlanta metro area and screwed with our program for about 20 minutes, but thanks for sticking around. And again, it's fascinating to me how few people, apparently now there were three or four, I'm getting these emails. Well, I knew it was a rerun. I knew you had problems. But, you know, the other 26 people who listen to the program, because I maintain, I don't care what they say, we have at least 50 listeners. The other 26 people said, Anyway, we love you all. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight in Phoenix at KPHX and also answered your calls. Ian and Kathy had to work for their massive paychecks tonight, that's for sure. Thanks to Billy Foster, who moderates our chat room at novamradio.com. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. And thanks to the work of the moderators at mikemulley.com in that message board chat room. It's not a chat room, message board. Catherine Bay is the executive producer. Back to your calls. Joe is calling from Fairfield, Iowa, listening via Sirius. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I have a train of thought.
Okay.
That it's going to be a little bit difficult to connect with what you're talking about this evening.
Yeah.
But my idea is to nip it in the bud. That is, to keep the corporate interest from getting control of the next election.
Yeah.
And the first step to that is to make honest the voting machines. I heard that I'm under the assumption that in California they found that a large percentage of the voting machines were hackable and unreliable,
mm-hmm.
and that they did not have the time to correct the problem before the primary election. And I just want to get the idea out there that to get the voting machines right before they're used.
Okay, well, instead of getting voting machines right, Joe, I've got a better idea. Get rid of them. I don't care how it's done, just get rid of them. Go back to punch cards and make sure the little holes that receive the chads are emptied periodically. If not punch cards, then get paper ballots. Use the Canadian system. I don't care. Screw these machines. And I'm not a Luddite that's against technological advances, but come on. I've said before, the only way I feel comfortable about a touch screen or a voting machine, electronic or computerized voting machine, make the program open source. Anyone can see what it is. It's only used as a retrieval system. It is not used as a calculating system. It's not used as anything other than to make it easy to vote. Anyone can see how many votes were cast. Nobody can actually tamper with it. All it does is record a vote and spit out a receipt. And that's it. Anything short of that to me is bat squeeze. Where are we? Phil is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Right on with the getting rid of those
the machines.
Voting machines. They
yeah.
did it down here in San Diego. So Ms. Cowan was just, shot them down saying last Friday saying that they were no good.
Yeah, well, you're Secretary of State in California, but I think she also said that the precincts or the districts that are using them could go ahead and use them in the primary coming up in February.
Well, the thing that people out here say is do the absentee thing. At least we've got our written, evidence. I was just calling to give you three did you knows. Did you know that Lee Atwater's brain is in Karl Rove's freezer?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Did you know that Karl Rove is not a BG, boy genius? He's a BLT. That's a bootlicking traitor.
Yeah.
And did you know that President Shrub rides his bicycle on a bicycle path because that way he becomes a true cycle path?
I got one more for you.
Okay.
Did you know that you really stretched on all three of those? But I appreciate.
Hey, we're liberal. Okay.
I got you. I appreciate the effort though, Phil. Thanks a lot. All right. Take care. Take care, Phil. John is calling from Mountain View, California, listening on The Quake. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
And just wanted to say that Woodstock happened, the first day of Woodstock. Elvis, yes, tomorrow, 30 years. And I graduated from college this week, as a matter of fact, from the University of Iowa. And so there's some nostalgia for you. Woodstock, first day of the 15th. And anyway, what I'm really calling about is Rove, the next chapter. Well, we may have gotten a little tidbit of the next chapter. ABC's blog, which is pretty good, Brian Ross and those guys at ABC, are saying that there's another wave that Gonzalez answered the question from Dianne Feinstein about how many U.S. attorneys were fired, because, of course, his fingerprints are all over this.
Right, right.
And he said, quote, Gonzalez, among other lies, he didn't know. But all of a sudden, I've noticed their blog is posting something. I think Crooks and Liars got something about the third article down. It's a pretty hot spot about this very issue in the middle of the summer, these dog days of summer with your brownouts and everything else going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this thing is going to resurface and come back to... Maybe that's why he left. He didn't want to fully defend a contempt of Congress and other charges and other miscreants coming in.
Well, John, I hope you're right. I hope the dog days do give somebody a bad case of rabies. Oh, you'll pardon the pun, but you know what I mean. Hey, listen, thanks a lot, John. I appreciate you checking in. We got a boogie. Thanks to everybody tonight. I appreciate your participation and your patience. Huh? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.